it? Where the fuck is it? I'm totally gonna have to edit this. But where the fuck is the recording?
No, you totally shouldn't.
Okay, you ready? Now we're gonna record. You ready?
Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. No!
Now do it, Sabrina.
Hello and welcome to Not a Safe Space. This is Sabrina.
And Tabby.
You can't hold back this energy for that long, Tabby.
I know. I'm so sorry. I forgot where the button was. Okay, guys. So you guys are going to hear our intro before I started recording on Skype so you can see the video. Yeah, welcome to episode 49. It is probably going to be a shit show. Tabby is running on 3 hours of sleep. And if you don't know, that is never a good thing.
Yeah, what happened?
So I had to change my recording schedule for the audiobook for Burden of Trust, right? So I had been going in the mornings on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Well, last Tuesday, every time I started talking, a fucking car went by. And you can't have that background noise because it's audible and they're so fucking particular about every little fucking sound, right?
Right.
So it took me an hour and a half to record 15 minutes. I was like,
oh, fuck.
I was like, I can't do this. I was like, you guys, we can't do this. So we decided to do it at night. Well, I'm not a night person.
Right. No, you're not.
I'm not. I don't like being up late. So I went out. We recorded at 9:30. I got in the studio about 10, because I got to have my tea and, like, lubricate my vocals and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But I recorded 40 minutes worth of reading in an hour. Hell of a lot better.
Right. Okay.
So
what time did you get done?
I got done about 11, almost 11 o'clock. Didn't get home until about midnight and probably didn't get asleep until about 1. And then our fucking rooster, that blue cock motherfucker, started crowing at 5:45 every morning. And I can't sleep through it. So I am awake. Only on, was that 4 hours of sleep? Maybe 5?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not fun.
What triggers the rooster to cock-a-doodle-doo?
I don't know.
Which is just a funny word, by the way. Cock-a-doodle-doo.
Why does a rooster have so many cocks in its name?
Cock-a-doodle-doo. All right. Why do they cock-a-doodle-doo?
Well,
do we know?
I don't really know. I thought it was because the sun was coming up and they're like waking everybody up. But this fucker?
That's a Kellogg's commercial.
Right, it is, isn't it? But that's like the closest that I have.
Listen, that's how I've gotten all my education in life is from TV. So I honestly assume the same thing.
Me as well. But this little fucker will crow at 12, at 4, at 6, at 7, at 9. And I'm like, do you ever shut the fuck up? Now, here's the other funny part about this fucking rooster. So not only does he crow at 5:45 in the morning, he'll crow for about 3 or 4 minutes, and then he'll be quiet for a half an hour. I swear to God, it's a half an hour, and then he starts crowing just long enough for me to try to fall back asleep. And then he
It's like the snooze button.
Yes.
Ooh, that sucks.
I don't like the rooster.
How many roosters on one farm?
Well, we only have one rooster. You have one rooster for every set of hens.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have two roosters in a flock.
Because they'll fight each other?
Or they'll kill each other.
Yeah.
So
cockfights.
Right. So, like, we have these Lavenders and Wyandottes, and there's only one rooster in that chicken tractor I told you we were building and we put together. Mm-hmm. So there's one rooster there. And then when we have the breast chicken, there'll be one rooster in there with all those girls.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. What's the most exciting thing you had going on this week?
The most exciting thing. Nothing. That was it. Having to record at night. I mean,
But that's exciting because your book is getting there, right?
Right. It is getting there. And I am mentally trying to start preparing myself to jump into book number two. Not anytime soon. Not making any promises to anybody kind of deal. But yeah, starting to do that. And then, other than that, I've just been working, you know, just doing my thing.
Yesterday, you know, we had dinner at our a friend's house, at mine and yours, mutual friend's house. So we're going to dinner, or we set it up last week, like before school started. Hey, let's grab dinner next week. Let's have, we've been playing the game Bullshit.
Yeah.
The card game. It's so much fun. And so we planned dinner. It's in my phone. I've told my kids. I've told my husband. I had a full day of work yesterday where I sat and worked from, you know, I went to the gym, came home, worked until I'm sitting at my desk at 6:15. And I get a message from poor Doe saying, hey, you guys on your way? I was still in my workout clothes from 7:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Not showered or anything. And I was like, fuck. I completely just forgot. Like, Nate had even come up to me around 4 and said, hey, if we don't have anything going on tonight, is it okay if I go play hockey? And I was like, yeah, I don't care. I'm going to be sitting here working all night. And he was like, okay. So he was going to leave to go play hockey. And then all of a sudden I was like, hey, dinner. And when I got, it only took us an hour to get there. So pretty impressed that both of us showered. Got everything put together to be there in an hour. That's not terrible. And I'm an asshole. When I walked in, I was like, thank goodness I'm pretty because this didn't take long. So then,
oh my gosh.
They were giving me a hard time, but each of them, I am proud to say that each of them said, this is so unlike you. Like, right. I can't think of anything that I've just ever forgotten or been late for or just... there was just so much in my head. I completely forgot about it.
Okay. Yeah.
But it made me think about, so earlier in the week, my best friend and Jen were talking about this new guy that Jamie's dating. And he is a business owner and he's very busy. And during the week, he's not a big texter. And some nights he's not available. Now he is a business owner of a very successful business, right? And he's working all the time and he's networking and he's doing all these things. And she was complaining to me about it like 2 or 3 days ago. And I was pro him 100% because I was like, listen, if I've got a busy week, I'm sorry, I don't have time to have dinner with you guys. And it's not that... I don't care. Because she was like, well, if you don't have time for me, then you don't care about me. And you make time for the people that you care about. And I was like, that's fine. But you don't understand beyond an 8-to-5 job, right? Like,
right.
If you have an 8-to-5 job that you can shut it off and walk away, bravo to you. But it made me think about, as much as yesterday I got up and left, the first 2.5 hours of that dinner... my brain was still on everything else at my desk.
Right.
And my desk is really where I wanted to be, but I knew that I needed to go have dinner with my friends. I already had a prior commitment, but I'll tell you, if I had made that commitment on Monday, I probably would have declined and said, this is not the week. That's why we didn't do it last week.
Right.
You know, and I stand by that of defending somebody's job and what they do for a living. And... yeah. And I don't think a woman should date a man and then tell him, well, you need to spend more time with me. It's not all about your work. Well, you need to find a new man.
Right. Because if that's not going to work for you, then you need to find someone else because he's working on building something bigger than just this. I mean, he's a business owner, right?
So right. Like,
and the same thing with you and me. We both work hours outside of regular business hours. Shit. Right. Last night, I was working until midnight because I was recording for my book. That is work. You know?
Yeah, it's just, it's funny that I was arguing the point and then live the example 2 days later of why it's, and I love the fact, this is the difference though, and I'll give this man credit for it, is that she said that when he's with her, he is with her 100%. He's right. not on his phone. He's not texting or checking emails, which is very difficult for me to do.
Right.
And so he is succeeding at still dividing that, which you should be very thankful for, because a lot of us, including me, have trouble doing that, of shutting my brain down and moving forward.
Right. Because you have so much coming at you at so many different yeah. times. And then when, like in your job, when a client needs something, you fucking have to stop what you're doing and take care of that client, because right. that's your business. That's your livelihood.
Right. Yeah. It's, I'm glad we went yesterday. It's always fun. But when we signed on this morning, you asked, is everything okay? And everything is okay. It's just, there is so much going on right now.
Right.
My work is so busy, thankfully. My house is insane, but mm-hmm. at least there's movement, but there's a lot of movement, which means there's a lot of packages coming out of to the door, a lot of money coming out, money coming in, money. Right. It's just so much that there's no solution to it, but to work, to
get through it.
Time, right? I gotta right. just fucking get through it.
Right. And I think that's happening for a lot of us, because Dion's work is starting to pick up again, right? The mm-hmm. pace, the speed, right? And we have been spending the last 6 months in lazy mode, right?
Right.
So it's hard for us to get back going. And let me tell you what, I know the economy is on the uptick. And do you want to know why? Because as I was driving home last night, the strip club down the street was open and for business. Now, you know the economy is doing good if people have got disposable income to throw at strippers. We are on the uptick, people.
I think regardless of rich or poor, fuckers are still throwing money at strippers.
No, but this place has been closed since the pandemic, and now it's finally back open.
So those poor strippers are just back to work. I'm interested to know what their bodies look like.
Yeah, well,
Did they gain that Corona 15?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
But the strip club near your house had some pretty badass bitches in there.
Yeah. I don't know.
So I wonder now if they look like Jacksonville strippers.
Oh, God. It's so horrible. Well, apparently,
possible.
Sabrina, you're going to have to come down and go look. You got to go check out the strippers now. See if they meet the Sabrina approval rating.
Yeah. We'll see if they do. Oh, what else is going on? Anything exciting? Hey, the RNC was this week.
Yes.
Did you guys watch it every night?
Dion did. I did not. Uh-huh. Again, it's on late. I'm like, I'm going to bed. Mm-hmm. So I did not watch it. I got a little bit of it last night when Trump spoke, which was... it was good. I was like, all right, it's a good speech. He hit all the points. And I was like, okay, you know.
What kind of points did it, what did you like about it?
Pro-America, obviously, you know, he put some jabs in there at Joe. I can't really remember. Again, mind you, I was half asleep when I was listening. He was talking about, one thing he did say was about school choice for the entire country. So I really like that, because school choice is a big deal, right? You should be able to put your kid in whatever school you want to go into. So there is a big fucking bug on my window, and I'm getting like fucking scared right now, guys. So we're going to have a little bit of fun, because Tabby's going to get a shoe and try to kill it while we're on air. And so God help me, okay?
Okay.
Right. Hold on. Oh, fuck me. Oh, don't go behind my computer, you dirty little bastard. This is going to be hilarious, isn't it? Where is it?
Tabby's,
Are you still talking?
No, I'm just watching you with your shoe. I'm not sure what you're trying to do. What kind of bug is it?
It's a big one. That's what it is. Oh. And remember, I'm on a farm and our windows aren't completely sealed because they're from like 1970. So shit gets in that should not be in here. Ah, there it is. Ah! Die! Die! Oh my god, it's on my phone!
Ew!
The fucker's still not dead! Now I don't know where it is. Oh my god, it looks like a wasp. Hey!
What is happening?
Okay.
Got it?
I don't know. Yeah. Die!
All right, Tabby, fucking okay. Kill the thing already.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. What is happening?
I have no idea. This bug.
Get really... your life together right now.
Okay.
Right
so now. You get I'm your trying. Life together. I'm trying. Oh, my God. This is going to be the most hilarious episode fucking ever. All right. I got to clean up the body later.
Oh, no. All right, I have a certain path I want to go down. So, let's get it together.
I'm trying.
Get it together.
Okay, but guys, remember, I'm sleep deprived. Only 4 hours. Weird shit happens. This is why Tabby needs her sleep.
Get it together. It's Friday.
It's Friday?
It's Friday. It's Friday. Woo. Do you remember that song? Everybody no. gets down on Friday. Everybody I don't know why people try texting Friday. Me during the day. I don't answer. It takes me hours to answer. Stop texting me in the middle of the day.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a song of Friday. Everybody knows that song. It's Friday. It's Friday. Rebecca Black?
No. No idea.
Oh, by the way, I also found out this week that I'm a yeller. That apparently I talk really loud.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. You totally talk loud.
I'm going to try not to.
Oh, Lord. That's not going to work out very well.
No, it's not. It's not. Hold on. I got to play the Friday song. This came out... I think Ethan was in middle school. And she was like a one-hit wonder.
You don't know this song?
No.
How could you not?
To the bus stop.
To the bus stop. What?
Yeah, hold on. She's gonna say. In the back seat. All right, here it goes. Ready, everybody?
Friday. Gotta get down on Friday.
See? All right. So okay. Yes, it's Friday. So let's get our shit together.
Okay, we're trying to get our shit straight. I have never heard that song, and probably because I've never had a middle schooler.
Yeah, but it played beyond that. And I don't know why I just had my face so close to the camera.
I don't know either. Okay, you get your shit together, girl.
I know. All right. So the RNC, I have not, I didn't watch it the same way I didn't watch the DNC. I did wake up every morning and read the hit and misses of the night. I tried to stick with CNN since CNN is who wrote the hit or misses that I read from last week.
Okay.
But I did that in the hopes that it would be a fair and equal review.
And was it?
No. So I'm not even going to read it because
yeah,
it's where I thought that they were trying to be fair last week on their own DNC and provide just as many misses as hits.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they flipped it on their hits or miss this time, you can tell that they have a point of view that they want to sell, and it's not in regards to the RNC, so I'm not going to bother reading it.
Right.
Because it's not fair, and that's not a fair conversation. So I will, though, do a little further research, and I would like to at least read out the misses.
Okay.
So that we're being fair and equal here. But I'm going to have to do a little research. Maybe there wasn't any. No, just kidding. I'm sure there was.
I do have to say what I did watch, the weird part was they're not Trump's speech, but the other ones, there was no audience. So it was there was a weird, eerie feeling because there was like no applause or result.
Yeah.
There was no interaction between the speaker and the audience. So that part was kind of weird. But outside of that, tell me what you thought was.
The only one I did watch was Melania Trump. And the only reason I did was because I was listening to, watching the news prior to the RNC and the fact that they were talking about that Melania would be speaking again and that she was probably one of the, or known as one of the most hated first ladies ever, even though she actually hasn't done anything to earn that hate, right? She's literally done nothing, but you don't like her husband, so you're going to attack her.
Right.
In 2016, the last major speech she did was at the RNC for the election in 2016. And that speech had plagiarism in it from Michelle Obama, which was proven. She did not write the speech, and she said that. And this time, she was writing her own speech 100%.
Okay.
So added on to the fact that you know that people hate you anyways, you know that they're going to be talking about 2016. You know that you have to make sure every thought is your original thought because they're looking for you to mess up in this particular way.
Mm-hmm.
On top of the fact that she has only spoken English for the last 25 years, 50% right. of her life. She moved to the United States when she was 26 years old. To have to stand up in front of billions of people and make a speech for 15 minutes with none of those things against you makes me want to personally vomit.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how she felt. She was not a businesswoman. She was not a presenter before any of this. She was a supermodel or model or whatever she was. She was a pretty face. So to become a first lady and have to speak like that, I can't imagine how much anxiety she had. And then put all that other stuff on there. I made it a point to watch because I wanted to support her fail or pass. Whether or not she fucked up that night, she deserved my support because I feel for her. I just did. And I thought that she did a great job. She, for a pretty woman, she's got a weird face. So let me just be, you know, the superficial person I am. She's pretty, but a little weird. And so the way that she kept looking at this, the teleprompter on the right and left, but only hitting center every once in a while. And when she would hit center, because her eyes are so, it's almost alien looking.
Right.
That it creeped me out when she was looking straight ahead. But I thought she did a really good job.
Her lines are very hard. She doesn't, right.
They're
so
very
hard.
She doesn't
have a lot of soft features in her facial expression.
Yeah.
So
I thought against the American flags and her army green dress or jumpsuit, I think it was a dress, beautiful. She looked beautiful and patriotic and military-like. Mm-hmm. I love that. The one part that really stuck with me is what she said about Trump. And she kind of poked fun about the fact that we all know what he's thinking no matter what, good or bad. And the people in the garden kind of giggled a little bit. And she made a couple jabs at the fact that he has zero filter. But what she did say is, good or bad, you know where my husband stands. You know what he's thinking regardless. And after that, the commentators were talking and Chris Christie. Who's the fat governor from New Jersey? Is that Christie?
Yes, it is Christie.
So he was saying, you know, Joe Biden has to be two different people. Let's see the version we're going to get of him. Are we going to get the really cool, funny Joe that was our VP back when he was Obama's VP? Because he didn't have any worry in the world. Or is he going to be the real woke, angry, Black Lives Matter, COVID, this, that the world wants him to be right now, which really isn't who he is. And he said, you know, we don't know what face Joe's going to put on next week. But what we do know is who our candidate is. We know who Trump is, good or bad. And you don't have to like him. And that's what Melania was saying, basically, is you don't have to like him, but you can believe the words that are coming out of his mouth is what he does. And I do believe when she said, you know, we haven't slept in the last 6 months because this man is working as hard as he can to fix this world for you guys. And I believe that because he's a businessman. And the economy, there's nothing worse than that can be keeping him up. He is a numbers man. He's a businessman. I also believe the amount of times that he's been bankrupt and rebuilt his fortune, he's the perfect man for this job.
Because he knows how to pull himself out of the hole. And
What I don't need to do is listen to Trump say all of that. Like, I heard it from his wife, and I'm good with that. I was very happy with just hearing
that. And sometimes it's good to hear it from somebody else, right? Because it's not him tooting his own horn. So... And I like what you're saying, because you don't know about Joe what you're going to get, because in the end, if you think about it, Joe's two-faced. He's going to put on whatever face in front of whoever. He's a yes man, and you never know what you're going to get.
Right. I really like that. That really stuck with me, because it really is kind of who I am as well, right? People can call me a bitch or whatever they want to say, but I'm not trying to be mean, but I'm just saying the way I feel and my opinions about it. And if you don't like it, don't ask me, but I am going to say it if you ask. And I'm going to tell the truth, not with the intentions of hurting anybody's feelings, but I think the truth is just the best line to always walk. And sometimes people won't receive it well, but that's not on me.
That's on them. That's their own responsibility.
Right. So, you know, I can be forgiving of that and still, and I don't have to like him. You don't have to like Trump to vote for him.
And I think that's the biggest problem Americans have had over the last couple of decades, is that you feel like you have to like this person who's going to be the president. And if you don't like him, he can't be a good president. But that's not the case.
Right.
So I have to like my therapist. I don't have to like my president. I don't have to like my surgeon. If my surgeon is going to go in there and fix what's wrong, but he's an asshole, but he's the best, I want the fucking asshole.
Yeah, see, and I would even say you don't have to like your therapist, right? Your therapist is going to be the one person that tells you all the things you don't want to hear. And if they're a good therapist, you're going to leave there not liking them.
That's true, too.
Because the process is difficult and it's hard to hear. It's funny. So and I'm glad this conversation turned this way, because these are the two things that happened to me this week that is like an aha moment. Me being late and not showing up for dinner last night and proving my point of just not having headspace for people. And then the other was, I was asked a question this week of, do you want to be liked or credible? Would you rather be liked or credible? And I said, credible. I don't care if you don't like me, but if you can come to me and you can count on me and you trust me, hopefully that will at least make you like that part of me. If not, I don't care. It's good. Yeah. We're good. I'd rather be credible. Exactly.
Because being liked means somewhere along the lines that you had to alter yourself for somebody else.
Great point, Tabby. You really do. As a listener, I listen to some of the advice and feedback you give me. You have these fucking bars, these one-liners that are great. And that was one of them. That was good. What a great point.
And that shit I like that. I don't plan it. That shit just comes out of my mouth.
I'm just naturally. Like, I'm an asshole and I'm like, oh, well, thank goodness I'm pretty. You're like, well, thank goodness I'm smart. Pretty much,
because looks are going to fade. I got to have something to back my ass up with.
That's right. So from there, like I said, I had a plan with all of this. From there, the DNC, the RNC, the night that Melania speaks, Cardi B posts on Twitter, or Melania's spokesman posts on Twitter. Let me pull up the article so I'm getting it exactly right. Because do you know what the WAP is?
Yes. WAP is Cardi B, the singer of the WAP. Okay.
Yes.
So I know what the WAP is because I read the lyrics. I have not heard the song.
Right.
I have never been so disgusted. And it was really disgusting. Now, mind you, I didn't hear the music, but the words, when you read it, just read it. And I was, and I didn't know what I was getting into. And I'm like, what the fuck am I reading? And mind you, I'm a sexual person, right? Like,
do you feel that way when you read Prince's lyrics of Pussy Control?
Well, that's a good point.
And he's yelling, Pussy Control. No, we're all singing along with it and moving our bodies. And he's not the most disgusted. Prince is a legend for his lyrics. And he talks about, what about his song Cream?
What song Cream?
He has a song Cream about making women cream.
I don't recall that song. The only, yeah, the only Prince song I'm recalling right now is Little Red Corvette.
No, he sings the song Pussy Control. He sings Cream. Okay. What about the song My Neck, yeah. My Back, Lick My Pussy and My like Crack?
Yeah.
We all, I mean, yeah,
you're
see?
Right. I mean, so, but again, I preface it this with, I did not listen to it. I read it. So that when I was reading it, and of course, the thing was, you know, it was being advertised towards kids. So there's a bit of bias.
Well, listen, so that's on people's parents, right? That's like when I heard about the song, I asked Lorelai if she'd heard it, and she said it's all over TikTok. And all I can tell her is, okay, well, please just click over it. There's nothing I can do about it. She's not listening to it in her room, but to think that she's not going to hear bits and pieces of it, to think that I don't play, you know, rap songs that are singing the same thing.
I mean, like what's that one? The one you told me about. Get Your Nails Done. Pressing.
Oh, yeah. The Lizzo song.
The Minnesota
yeah.
Vikings.
Yeah. I heard that song last night. Where is... Let's see. I'm going to read some of it, of this song. Now, I will... I mean, the word... It's a graphic song. It's a graphic song. So, I wasn't going to talk about the controversy of the song. So, this song came out. It's Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, or somebody mm-hmm. the Stallion. And it's pretty fucking graphic. It's and I'm not a huge fan of the actual song altogether, but I also don't find it disgusting or offensive, and I just know that I don't have to listen to it. Cardi B is kind of a hit or miss for me. But it says, gobble me, swallow me, drip down the side of me, quick jump out for you, let it get inside of me. I'll tell him where he put it, never tell him where I'm about to be. I'll run down on him, for I have a beep run in me. I'm not allowed to say that word because I'm white. Beat it up, beep, catch a charge, extra large and extra hard. Put this pussy right in your face, swipe your nose like a credit card. Hop on top, I want to ride, I'll do a kegel while inside. Spit in my mouth, look in my eyes, this pussy is wet, come take a dive. All right, girl, get yours.
She's got hers, right?
Right? I mean, it's a mouthful.
Literally.
It's a mouthful of words that you don't want your mama to hear.
Correct.
So, going back to the RNC, there's this controversy on this song with Cardi B, which I side with Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion. Every male rapper, rock star, prince has written lyrics that are
grotesque,
sexual towards women and explaining how they want to fuck us. It's okay for us to write a song of how we actually want you to fuck
us. And so,
why don't you let us tell you?
And I agree. And I'm not a fan of those songs either. Let's just go ahead and clarify it. I don't like...
So you don't like any of them?
No. Yeah. I'm not biased whether it's a female artist or a male artist. I just read the words and I'm like, oh. And let me tell you what. Sometimes, like the whole Prince song you were telling me about... When mm-hmm. I hear it, I don't hear those words. I hear something else. So my dumbass is going, oh, da, 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 you know. So. Yeah.
Got it. Well, so this is what happens. Melania speaks on Tuesday night at the RNC. And her congressional candidate, or one-time congressional candidate, tweets out, America needs far more women like Melania Trump and far less than Cardi B. So technically... this lady takes the first punch towards Cardi B. Cardi has been coming for, has had a lot of people coming for her and Megan Thee Stallion due to her WAP music video, and this time was no different. Didn't she used to sell that WAP? The tweeted the rapper. And then the other lady said no. So Cardi says, hey, didn't she used to sell that wet ass pussy?
Oh, that's what, okay. About Melania. That's what WAP means.
Yeah, wet ass pussy. So she says, well, didn't she used to sell that wet ass pussy? And then, and this is the most I've ever said this word. I'm very sorry for everybody. And then the lady replies back, no, that's a total and complete lie. What's not a lie is that you're absolutely destroying America's youth with your lyrics and shame, and you should be ashamed of yourself. So then they explain what Cardi B is referring to is that the Daily Mail posted something that Melania was a paid escort or some type of sex worker, and she sued them and won for $2.9 million. So Cardi B, first of all, might want to
check her facts.
Be careful for what she's right before you go and repeat stuff like that. So then it talks a little bit about how then the next lady goes on and says, Cardi B drugged and robbed men during her time as a stripper. She raps songs about her genitalia and she's corrupting youth. Her husband cheated on her and she told the youth of America that it's okay to stay with the cheating man. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris campaign with her. So there's some things that I don't like. The whole youth thing that they keep mentioning, again, this is the parent's responsibility. Yes. If your children are looking at Cardi B and her man as what a healthy marriage looks like, you should probably look in your own fucking home. That's on you to teach your children what a healthy relationship looks like. If they're looking to rappers, that's on you.
Right. And also, it's your responsibility as a parent to try to limit that type of music as much as possible.
Right. And listen, where Lorelai is aware of the song, I made it very clear to her that I'm not against the song.
Right.
I'm not against artists doing it. It's just not age appropriate for her. Right. And so she shouldn't listen to it. And it's not age appropriate for me. I'm not mentally aged enough
for
that.
You're too old for it now. That's the problem. You're not in that sweet spot anymore. Because this is a 20-year-old song. It's what it boils down to.
Yeah, what a great point, right? Like, this, for everybody that's criticizing it, it wasn't written for you.
No. So, like, I don't like it because I'm almost 40. But if I had been 20, like, lick my neck, my pussy, and my crack, which I like because that was a peak song in my youth,
right,
in my sexual exploration, right there. Because there is a scientific study between the music that comes out during your late teens and early 20s, that music has an emotional impact on you and it sticks with you forever. So if you're in that age range, say in the 50s, when you're fucking 80 years old, you're still listening to the 50s music because it resonates with you. It sticks with you. There is a psychological study that it actually stays, and that ends up being your favorite type of music. Which is why, like, you and I fucking love the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It stays.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. But that makes me also think then, this is the kind of song that I would want my 20-year-old daughter to listen to. Because it is a song that is saying the way that these women want to have sex. Where we are used to men telling us, well, this is the proper way. This, if you do it this way, you're a slut. If you do it this way, you're a lady. Well, fuck you.
Right. And you don't get to.
So who are you?
You don't get to make.
Yeah, so I like that.
You don't get to make that decision, right? And if another woman wants to come out and make another song and talk about having more of a sexual relationship and a loving, committed relationship and create a song, that's fine too, because she has a right, because it's different for everybody. It doesn't have to be, I'm just fucking a man. It can be, I fucking love this man. I'll die for this man kind of deal. Or woman, whatever. Right? But it's not just one fits all.
Right. I think that whoever that correspondence or whoever the lady was that originally cheated and made or tweeted and made her first shot at Cardi B should have kept it political and not thrown a celebrity back in it. Because guess what happened? The celebrity has more followers than Melania Trump in the reality. So Cardi received more support
and then it spins it against Melania, that, or, you know, it's the right side against the left again, where we're being judgy of Cardi and attacking her for being a strong female and calling her a slut and a bad stripper and robbed and all this.
I get
the lady should have said, we need more women like Melania and not like Hillary. Then it makes it fucking political, right?
Correct.
Let those political maniacs argue it out.
Right.
Don't bring a celebrity into it.
Right, because she's not a politician. The same way I...
Great point. Yeah, that's not what her job
is. That's not what her job is. The same way I don't want to go to one of her concerts and fucking be lectured about politics from her.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. So I thought all of that was interesting. That was the only spin-off that I got from the RNC. Now, going to... Why don't we talk about, since we're talking about women, why don't we just jump to...
The journal?
The what?
The sexist journal, the medical journal. Is that what you were...
Oh, I was going to... No, I was going to talk about Eliza.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. Yes. Tell me about your badass chick.
Yeah,
we can't say chick anymore.
Yeah, because the Dixie chicks ruined that for me.
I know.
Why don't you kind of explain? You posted a question on Facebook, right, about podcasts and looking for topics.
Oh, yes. I totally forgot that I did that. Girl, everywhere. It's just constant. But yeah, so I posted on Facebook asking people for topics, and I got a good amount of response from people who wanted to learn more about women in history and the achievements and accomplishments and the shit that women have done to, like, make our country great. So Sabrina came up with this good idea to make, what did you call it? Badass.
I just wrote badass bitches in history.
There you go.
So, it's funny that, did you know that a few years ago a conversation came up with replacing the $10 bill president with maybe a female face of some sort?
Vaguely remember that.
So a lot of the articles that I read about the badass bitch that I picked was that they were surprised that she wasn't one of the people nominated or even considered. And for anybody that is a new fan, thanks to COVID and the fact that Disney released Hamilton on Disney Plus. So if you've watched the Broadway play Hamilton, if you were a fan prior to COVID and lucky enough to see it while on tour, then you know who my badass bitch in history is, because this is how I became aware of her. It's Elizabeth Schuyler,
okay,
which goes by Eliza.
All right, so you're going to have to clarify a little bit, because I did not watch Hamilton. I have no back reference, so fill me in.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Good.
I'm going to tell you all about her. So Elizabeth Schuyler was born on August 9th, 1757. She was the daughter of a Revolutionary War leader, Major General Philip Schuyler. Her mother descended from one of New York's richest families. Now, Eliza and her sisters grew up very, very wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
They grew up surrounded by having military visitors and patriots constantly at their house, so much so that she was taught to play backgammon by Benjamin Franklin during one of his family visits to her family's property. She met Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Hamilton at the Winter's Ball in 1779. So the only thing that you're missing out is obviously the movie or the play Hamilton is about Alexander Hamilton, who was one of our founding fathers, mm-hmm. whose life was cut short due to one of the most famous U.S. duels in history. He was killed. He probably would have been one of our presidents at one point. But he really worked to lay the foundation of what America looks like in our financial institutions. And she was his wife during that time.
Okay.
So Alexander is a great, great man. He was the right-hand man of General Washington, mm-hmm. Who of course became our first president. So he drafted a lot of essays and articles on Washington's behalf, on the U.S. government's behalf, a ton. So she met Alexander at the Winter's Ball in 1779. Alex wrote in one of his letters, "I met you in every dream, and when I wake, I cannot close my eyes for ruminating on your sweetness." To a friend, he stated, "Though not a genius, she has good sense enough to be agreeable and not a beauty. She has fine black eyes, is rather handsome, and has every other request of the exterior to make a lover happy."
Oh, so, my God. I want to bitch slap that motherfucker right now. Like, seriously. Could you be any more condescending?
Yeah, but you know what? It's very similar to, like, a William Shakespeare, what are those things called? Proverb, whatever. Sonnet.
Yes.
There's a William Shakespeare sonnet that I only know of because of, one of my favorite shows as a kid, and Jared Leto is being quizzed on it, and it talks a little where he says the same thing, like, are her eyes the bluest I've ever seen? No, but they're the color that I love the most. Are her lips the fullest I've ever seen? No, but they're perfectly okay. Misshapen in the way I love. So that's kind of the way I read this. Is she the smartest? No, but she's sensible enough for, because Alexander was brilliant and constantly writing and she was good enough to fulfill his needs mentally and mm-hmm. and intellectually, and he was very handsome as well. And so where he was saying, is she a supermodel? No, but she is still equally as beautiful.
Okay.
It's the way that I took it, even though when you read it, you like, really?
Yeah.
If William Shakespeare could get away with it, I'm sure Hamilton thought he could as well.
Apparently he did, because he fucking wrote it.
Right. So Alex and Eliza were married the next year, and Eliza gave birth to their son 2 years later, the first child, Philip, which 7 more children would follow over the next 2 decades. Along with that, the Hamiltons also raised an orphan daughter of a friend for 10 years. And Alexander Hamilton himself was an orphan. And he really, really worked hard had to work against the wealthy, well-known men. Like, you know, the people that Eliza was born into. Uh-huh. He had to work against those people because he came from nothing. And he felt like he had a lot more to prove.
Okay.
And had to fight for every ounce of respect that he had, and really put his motivation on the fact that he was an orphan and he had nobody. And Eliza was really touched by that. So when they started having children, they took in an orphan mm-hmm. for 10 years of their life. She was described to be a firm but affectionate mother, and she made sure that her children all had a very religious upbringing. During the marriage, Eliza then helped her husband write speeches, including Washington's farewell address, countless political essays, corresponded with heads of state, and worked alongside Hamilton as kind of his muse. And he ran ideas through her and thoughts, and she really assisted him through all of that. In the middle of their marriage, the Reynolds affair was published, and it came out that Alexander Hamilton had been having an affair mm-hmm. and it was going to be used as he had an affair and then was blackmailed by the man's wife to continue to pay him, or he would make it known and it would ruin his political career. Right. Because mm-hmm. after the Revolutionary War, he was working alongside President Washington at that point. And so then he started paying them off every month for years, and somebody found out about it and threatened him. And so what Alexander did was tell the truth, and he released it. He released every single letter she had written him, mm-hmm. had wrote down every single dirty detail of his affair, and posted it out to say, I might be a bad husband and man and Christian man, but I'm a good politician. I'm still doing a good job over here, and I can be trusted to create this financial system for the U.S. I made a bad choice. And he publicly shamed Eliza like I could never imagine. He did that to save his career and not
his family.
To save his wife. Yeah, he could have easily just stepped down and said, I'm not going to let you do that to my family. And take the consequences of his mistake. And rather, I feel like she paid for that.
Well, yeah. So what happened? Did she stay?
She did. She stayed with him and they remained married until Alexander's death. What she did not do was she did not forgive the gentleman that actually was behind it, who was James Monroe, who became our sixth president. And till the day she died, on her deathbed, he came to visit her. And she was like, not enough time has gone by. Still would not forgive him.
But so my question is, why was she mad at him instead of her husband? Because her husband committed the affair. So are you saying that she would have been okay with never knowing that he was having an affair and he could have continued for the rest of their marriage?
Maybe. Who knows? But I do. That's an interesting point. I like that she was just a little petty about it. She held this guy responsible and never once wavered. And I think that's kind of something somebody has to do is their own self-defense, right? If you are, that's why people get mad at the mistress rather than their husband. They need somebody else. If you're going to forgive your husband, that hate and anger needs to go towards somebody else. And I guess this president was who got it. Mm-hmm. So, then tragedy strikes. So then after this affair comes out and she's humiliated, she forgives her husband. In March of 1801, her sister Peggy died. And then in November of 1801, their first son, Philip, died. He was shot in a duel. Less than 3 years later, Alexander Hamilton died as well. So her husband dies, leaving her a widow of seven kids plus an orphan with very little money, because the Hamiltons lived very well but did not make a lot of money. Alexander waived his military pension from the Revolutionary War, chose not to receive it, and was making about $3,500 a month from a government salary. Now, when he did pass away, she petitioned for his pension and did receive it, which I was glad that she did.
What about her family money? Because she was rich.
So her father died in 1803 3 years too. Right after Hamilton, about a year or so later, her dad died. And so she received a little bit of inheritance from there. And that was enough. So after she died, after her husband's death, Eliza and her children were forced out of their family home due to outstanding debts. So because of all the debts, they owned a property called the Grange outside of New York City. And after her death, she did not have enough money based on her own wealth to pay for that property. And so the bank seized it and auctioned it off. And then some of her rich friends purchased it back for $30,000 and then sold it to her for $15,000. And where she got that money from was from her inheritance from her father's land. She sold that land, got the $15,000, and now she was able to keep her kids in their family home. The funny thing that they mentioned is that the youngest of the Hamiltons' children did not grow up with the same privilege and wealth that the older ones did, because the older ones were born when their father was still alive and they were on, you know, grandfather was still alive and there was a ton of wealth, where the other kids really grew up poor and struggled with her being a widow. So she bought her house back. And then it says, Eliza did not spend her days in sorrow or self-pity. Instead, she immersed herself in her charitable work and decades-long campaign to ensure her Hamilton received the historic laurels she was sure he deserved. She recruited biographers to do proper work on her husband's writings and hired assistants to organize his paper. Even wore a little bag around her neck of pieces of sonnets that he had composed for her. She spent the next 50 years after his death. She lived 50 additional years after her husband.
Wow.
Back in a time where people did not live very long.
No, because they half times it make it out of childbirth.
Yeah, I mean, part of that sticks with me from the musical Hamilton is they keep saying, we're lucky to be alive. You got a paper cut back then, you were fucking dying.
Pretty much.
So, she spent the next 50 years after his death preserving Hamilton's papers and letters. She corresponded and visited with leading Federalists to collect papers and information about her husband. So she not only did she organize his own writings, he was constantly writing. So she hired assistants, she hired her son, and they just started cataloging and filling in missing information that they had based on letters that he received, his diaries, his writings. And then she went out and started interviewing those people. Well, tell me what this letter was about. Tell me what this was about. What happened here? And she spent the rest of her life documenting all of that and then sold it. The government, the U.S. government, bought all of it. And the only reason we know about Hamilton and all of the things he did was because of Eliza.
Right.
If not, his legacy would have died and he would have just been some orphan that somebody else would have taken credit
for all his work.
For what he did. Like James Madison tried to take credit for writing George Washington's farewell speech when Eliza was there, when she assisted Hamilton write it. And she made it very clear that James Madison did not write that speech.
Right.
So the documents were eventually purchased by the U.S. government in 1849 and then published the next year. She did have to eventually sell her home because the taxes and the upkeep were too much. She moved to a small property in the city where she was then moved to create and enlisted benefactors to build a one-room schoolhouse big enough to teach 40 to 60 children. It was a free school, even though she was struggling to pay for her own children's education. So back then, schooling was not free.
Right.
The public school system was not free, and you had to pay to educate your children. And so she really struggled to have her own children educated and saw the need within this smaller community that she moved into and bought a two-story building and then opened a free school where the teacher was, there was only one teacher.
Right.
And the teacher worked as the teacher and the janitor.
Yeah.
But those kids had books and they had food and they received an education at no charge. They rented a two-story home and hired... Oh, wait. No, that's a different one. Eventually, the school evolved into a scholarship fund that still exists that helps students from Washington Heights and Edgewood attend Columbia University. Because at the time when... free public schools were finally developed in the U.S.
Right.
Then it all obviously dissolved this one, but it then transitioned into a scholarship that still exists for kids in that community to then attend a further education. In 1906, Eliza and two other widows found five children weeping over the body of their dead mother in a slum tenement. The woman rented a two-story home and hired a married couple to care for the children. In March of that year, they formally founded the Orphan Asylum Society. It was the first private orphanage in New York City.
Wow.
They saved about, I think they said 50,000 children overall that
would have died in the streets.
She did this is solely in honor of her husband and understood what it felt like to be an orphan through him. And you think about a woman who has already lost her home. She has lost a lot of her family and she's got seven kids to feed.
Right.
And she is working to feed children with no parents. Like she just was constantly still doing what she felt like she needed to do in Alexander's honor.
Right.
Right. So, it says, in the first year, the society took on 20 children, but turned around nine times that amount due to size. Eliza and other activists soon set out to raise $25,000 to build a bigger facility. Eliza personally went out and solicited donations from state legislators. So her friends and the people that had worked with Alexander for years. And she knew how to work the system as well, right? Because she was with Alexander when legislation was written. You know, right. she was behind the scenes of all the founding fathers when he'd come home and complain and all these other things. They then built a three-story orphanage in 1987. The Orphan Asylum Society.
1987?
Sorry, 1807.
Okay, I was going to say 1987. Holy shit. That's longer than 50 years.
Right. She's a vampire. The Orphan Asylum Society, meanwhile, evolved into Grand Wyndham, a private nonprofit social service agency that still today provides parenting support and mental behavioral health treatments for 5,000 children and families each year. It also operates for a school at youth risk, at risk youth.
Yes.
So again, something from 1807 started by Elizabeth Hamilton is still in operation today, still doing the same thing.
That's crazy.
She took a particular interest in a poor boy named Henry McCavitt, whose parents had died in a fire. She personally paid for his school while she's got these other kids,
right,
and arranged a military commission for him at West Point. After his death in the Mexican-American War, he left his entire estate to the orphanage. She also helped raise money with the current First Lady at the time to help build the Washington Monument. She was responsible for building the monument to President Washington and was alive for the parade and the commencement ceremony. It says she lived nearly 50 years after the death of her husband. She was the last living link to the Revolutionary era, is what everybody said. Like, it was an honor to go and see her. By the time she was 97 years old, she was the last touch to where our country started from, right, you know, our freedom from England. And she died before the Civil War, so she never got to see the freedom of, you know, Black Americans. Mm-hmm. But she was just this part of history that everybody knew was rare, that she was still there. She was a very powerful woman, especially because she had never even become a first lady. So they said, you know, for a woman back then to have so much influence, mm-hmm, and for people to really listen to, that held no power at all, just showed the type of woman she was.
Right. She made her own power.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think, you know, the life that she, like you said, like, well, what happened to her money? And that she went from being this society rich girl, right, her whole life, to losing it all. And still, she could have married well, right, after that. She could have, right, married another rich man and just been his arm candy. And instead, she...
And raised her children.
Yeah, she spent the next 50 years making... If it wasn't for Eliza, besides the countless amount of children she helped, we would know nothing about our past and Alexander's influence in our country. Right. And she did that. She preserved who he is. And the part that sticks out the most to me is there's very little written about her, because it says she didn't write herself into history.
Right. She wrote him into history.
Right. She made sure he was there, but forgot about herself. And again, what a selfless, giving woman to,
right,
still be doing that after the shame and everything else, that she completely just, it reminds me of moms and women today, right? Or wives of putting everybody else first.
Yeah.
And then forgetting to write yourself into history. And we easily can do that. And she did that.
She did. But at the same time, when people find out about her story, it's more genuine and more awing than Alexander Hamilton.
Right. Right. I think that's the beautiful part of the play, is the very last song. It's something about, well, who's going to write his legacy? And up until then, I had no idea who did. And then when they start singing that it was Eliza, and all these things that she did after his death, it really was, oh, wow, let me rewatch this, because she was the actual hero in all of this. Alexander was a great man and he did a lot, but we wouldn't have any of that without her.
Right. And sometimes it's the person behind the curtain who's running everything that makes, right, all the difference.
Right. And it, you know, the quality of, and it's somebody similar to, I would say, like my husband's father, the quality of a quiet man, right? Mm-hmm. The quietness you can be a great man without screaming your accolades. And that's what Eliza reminds me of. She is a power. She was obviously a powerful woman,
mm-hmm.
that it's just stayed very quiet and humble.
So you had mentioned that she was very religious.
Mm-hmm.
A Christian teaching is that you are supposed to give to charity anonymously, because mm-hmm. when you give to charity and you boast about it and you're looking for recognition for it, you lose the true meaning of the charity.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is probably why she did what she did.
Right. Right. And I think, you know, most of it is she wanted to do them in Hamilton's honor and not in hers.
Right.
They could have been called the Eliza Hamilton Orphanage of such and such. Instead, it's the Hamilton. What, you know, it's just she really wanted to give him the credit that she felt like he was always searching for.
Right. Because he was the orphan. She wasn't.
Right. Right. So that is my badass bitch in history.
That girl, I love it. That was awesome.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of women out there that, again, that they've told somebody else's story and not their own. So mm-hmm. I think this will be fun for us to kind of dig up women that we don't know about.
Right.
And women that have made a difference for us, whether we know it or not.
Yep, exactly.
Love so, yeah. What should we jump to next?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to let you choose that one.
What do you think about the Journal's apology for sexist article?
Oh, I got a lot of comments on that. So,
Wait. Let's talk about the Mets and Marlins really quick. So,
okay.
Everybody knows there was another shooting in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep, in Kennesaw or Kenosha.
Yeah, and I'm not going to get into that, but a black man was shot by police officers. His name was Jacob Black. It's again caused, I mean, there's been rioting at, oh, I thought
Jacob
it was
Blake.
Blake. Okay, I wrote Black.
That's okay.
There's been rioting and stuff going on, but this sparked violence over the next couple days. And in response to that, the Mets and Marlins were scheduled to play, and they came out on the field, and everybody took their position. It looked like they were about to play. I mean, they sent a batter out, and then at that time, the entire Marlins team came out, the entire Mets team came out. They all took their hats off, and then they all left. And the only thing left on the field was a Black Lives Matter shirt. And I thought that that was a really cool moment. Regardless of Jacob Blake and whether we agree it was justified or not, that this was my biggest concern, right? Is, yes, I know that there's a problem when it comes to police brutality and all these things. My concern was that the anger that they had in May, that they're not going to be able to keep it going, to be able to actually create change or justice, right? That it's just these small moments. When I check my Facebook history of these police incident and protests that happen, mm-hmm. you see memories where I'm like, oh, this isn't something new. This has been happening. For me to see the baseball team do that just showed, okay, well, these players are willing to stop everything. Now it's not just a couple guys kneeling. As a team, they've decided we need change. We're not saying we're putting our vote in there about what happened in Wisconsin, but come on, we need to start seeing changes. Let's start seeing some of this stuff we're talking about.
Okay.
If not, let's keep having peaceful protest. And this is a peaceful protest.
That one is, yes.
Yeah, the players walking off is a peaceful protest, and they could not be any more American to me than at that very moment. And it was nice to see that the Milwaukee Bucks did the same thing. They walked off from a playoff game. There were other NBA teams and whatever sports are all playing. The only sport that did not do it was the NHL.
Okay.
The National Hockey League. So that's actually what I wanted to talk about, was that the NHL then got criticized for not doing anything.
But can I ask this one question? So all these teams are walking off the field and in protest, but are they giving back the money to the people who paid to watch them play?
What they're doing is, nobody's paying to watch them play because the stands aren't filled.
Okay, that's what I was curious because...
Yeah, but what they are doing is hurting big corporations, right? Big corporations that have the money to help change legislation and help... You're hurting the advertisers. They had nothing to film.
Right.
Not only do you not have tickets now, you no longer have the advertising. What are you going to do? Film, play 2 hours of just the empty baseball field and play commercials? You just lost all that money. If Black Lives really matter to you,
right,
then start doing something, right? Because all these corporations, after everything happened, you remember they were all releasing statements. We stand with Black Lives Matter. We're giving money. We're doing that. All right, guys. Here it is. Do something. If not, we're not playing.
So, right. And I agree. And giving the money needs to go back to the black communities.
Right.
Not Black Lives Matter, because we've had a whole separate conversation about that organization and what it's doing. I believe the money goes directly to the black communities. It does not need to be funneled through another organization.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I just think the whole thing is kind of great. It's exactly what's supposed to happen. It's exactly a form of peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. And it's their rights as Americans to do that. It does make me wonder how Colin Kaepernick feels, because he did not have the support when he originally started doing this, and he lost his entire career. And now you have everybody doing it and the leagues supporting it. And now, if I was Kaepernick, I'd be like, hello, I've been doing this shit for years. And you guys, everybody's looking at my number like, new phone, who dis? We don't know you, because being associated with him could have cost them his jobs. And right. Now everybody's doing it.
Well, because in the end, it all comes down to money. It has nothing to do with the lives for these advertisement and these big companies. It has to do with money. That's what it is. It's a trend. Let's be really fucking honest. It's a trend they're trying to profit off of.
Who's trying to profit off of?
The companies, the big corporate leagues, the leagues that are supporting it. And I hate to say the word trend, but because more people are waking up to this particular issue, now the leagues are backing it up. Not because there was an issue, but now because there's an ability to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I mean, it makes sense. I don't know if it's factual, though. I mean, do I agree that at the time when every single corporation came out and said, we understand, yes, I think once one corporation did that, all of them had to do it, because then it was, oh, well, Sears and Roebuck didn't say that. Sears and Roebuck must hate black people.
Right.
And this company, Pottery Barn, didn't say it. So Pottery Barn must hate black people. So then all of them did it. All the leagues, when the NFL did it, then the NBA did it. Then, well, and I don't know if it's in that order, but yes, I agree with that, right? Once they did it, it resulted in every one of those corporations also donating money. The thing is it needs to be constant, right? What they wanted to do, a large corporation like Apple giving away $1 million is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the walk-off does says it's not enough. It 4 months has gone on. There's still violence. There's still this. It's not enough. You guys said you're in for change. Well, we'll just sit back and not play until you're ready to help it facilitate change. Let's see it. Let's see what you guys are doing. And I like that they're sticking with it. My biggest fear is that it is a trend. And
it's about money.
And that they won't keep doing it. I don't think the players walking off was about money. I think it was about punishing people for money.
No, and I agree. I don't think the players are thinking about it from a money perspective, right?
Right.
But let's look at it this way. The NFL, initially, when Colin Kaepernick took a knee, they banned him, they fired him, they scolded him. Mm-hmm. 4 years later, now because there is a whole bunch of momentum going around it, they are now supporting it. Now it's getting larger and they're changing their perspective on it, right? Now they're all mm-hmm. in on it. Why is that? Why? You know what I mean? Because people are demanding something from them. Does that mean that the NFL actually really cares about Black Lives Matter? Or was it because it's now a trend that they're going to be able to profit off of from having a good a good persona, mm-hmm. right? So that's what I'm getting at. It's not about, for the companies, it's not about the movement. It's about the movement that the people are interested in because they don't want to look like fucking assholes because they'll lose money on the back end.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I agree with that from the corporation side. I think, you know, time will tell who said what they said in May if the longevity sticks, right? If the employment for black CEOs and whatever it might be, you know, any ethnicity, if white corporate America starts to get some diversity in it in the next 6, 12, 24 months, then yes, they were committed to their statements. If not, why is there only a handful of immigrant or ethnic NFL player, or not players, but owners, right? The players are diverse, but well, the owners aren't, and the ownership isn't, and the C-suite isn't, and that suite isn't. Let's bring diversity up this way, NFL, and then I'll believe what you're saying.
And I agree with that, but do you know how much money it costs to buy an NFL team?
Oh, yeah.
Billions. Billions of fucking dollars. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you want diversity. You can't lower the price. You've got to up bring them up. Like, you've got to give them the opportunity to make more money and work their way up to the top, right? Instead of just handing them an NFL team.
Does first of all, nobody's handing anybody an NFL team.
Right? Because if so, I want to be in line.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's doing that. But I think what you're trying to say is, you know, you actually have to have a diverse group that has billions of dollars to buy. And I don't know if it's factual or not. I mean, I was surprised. Remember when we Googled the other day, like the top 10 wealthiest black men, there was, you know, more people on the list that I didn't know. That were CEOs of I knew the stars and celebrities, but not the actual businessmen. So right. There are obviously, and there were more businessmen on there than we expected.
Correct.
That were billionaires.
And they may not want to be in that business.
Right.
So that's not fair either, right? So they don't want to be there. They don't want to be there. You can't force a billionaire to buy an NFL team.
Yeah, I don't think at this point it was because that they didn't want to be there. I think, you know, there's an obvious, if you walk into the corporate office of football teams and you look at the general managers and that staff, I'm talking about the C-suite, it's pretty fucking white in there. And they could have diversity throughout there. Where they don't mind using diversity is in the staff.
Okay.
Right? The workers, those football players, the coaches, the this, the that. In the C-suite, it's still awfully white.
Okay, well, and I guess my only experience is the C-suite because went to the Mercedes-Benz and watched the Atlanta Falcons play, okay?
Uh-huh.
In the top suite. And let me tell you what, up there, it wasn't white. I was the only white person.
Yeah, but you're talking about an office box. You're not talking about the owner suite.
Honey, the owner suite was next door.
Yeah, but you were in the owner suite, rubbing, and you know that was the owner. Who's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons?
The owner was next door. I was in the one right next to it.
Right. So who's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons?
I don't know. It was with Dion's company.
Right. So, I mean, there's so there is a black man, Arthur Black, and he is the co-founder of Home Depot.
Okay.
That owns the Atlanta Falcons. And I will say, like, my football team is owned by a U.S. citizen now, but he was an immigrant. And he is Saudi or something like that. I don't actually know. I just know he's maybe he's Indian of some sort. I don't know what he is. I can't even say his name properly. It's Sean Khan, something like that.
Okay.
And he has a true come-up immigrant story, but he's very rare, and the Atlanta Falcons is very rare. Most of them are old money. The owners of the Steelers are old money. The owners of Dallas is old money.
Yep.
There's just not enough diversity in those in those areas. Same thing in the NBA, right? They enjoy the players because they're athletic. But what about, and that's the difference, right? Is you can look at the NBA and say, or the NFL and say, well, they've got plenty of black people there. Look at all the players. Okay, well, you're using these people to make money for you, but won't allow them to wear suits and operate the fundamentals of what's going on down below. You're using them as sport equipment.
Right. And like you said, you need to make it where it's more able for them to move up the ladder. So
yeah.
A super famous basketball player who's made millions and millions and millions of fucking dollars, who saved his money, didn't blow it, didn't do dumb shit, retires, could go out and buy his own basketball team if he wanted to.
Right. Or even just a businessman, right? Just a black man from Columbia University that grew up in the city of New York and wants to be the CFO of an NFL team. You have to make space for him.
Right.
Not just out on the field. You have to make space for them next to
correct.
You at the
so
table.
So have you ever heard of Gary Vee? I think you have.
Uh-uh. No, I think you've mentioned him a couple
Gary
times,
Vee
but I don't know
Gary
Vee
is a motivational speaker. He is a child of an immigrant, Russian. I believe he actually is an immigrant. He worked in his father's wine store, built it up to a multi-million dollar company. He does motivational speaking. His goal, and he makes it clear, is to buy the Mets. Right? He mm-hmm. wants to buy the Mets. And what he is doing is he is on a 20-year long goal to actually buy the Mets. So, and he's doing it. Like, he's working his ass off, trying really, really, really fucking hard to make enough money to buy the Mets. The problem is we don't have enough people out there working that hard with that goal to buy the Mets. Do you know what mm-hmm.
Well, I think, is J-Lo trying to buy the Mets?
Or some team like that.
Yeah. I think the problem is, because I think there's also a vetting process, right? Is the concern of, will somebody like Gary Vee be vetted through the system as an immigrant, as a this, or will they give it to somebody like J-Lo and A-Rod because of the celebrity that they have, right? Like, because you just don't say, I have $5 billion, I'm going to buy this team. They select or reject
correct.
It, right? So you have to go through a vetting process. So I think, you know, what they're asking is, let's make that vetting. If as a black man, if I'm coming in or an immigrant or this or that, I want you to look at my money like it's white.
And I can...
Because money is
right,
money.
And I understand that. And to them, it's very much, I guess, personal. Like when you sell a house, you want to know, especially mm-hmm. if you had the house for 40 fucking years and you built a legacy on that house, right?
Dude.
Like when I bought my house, this woman made me like talk to her and she wanted to know like all the background whether or not before she would decide to sell to me.
Guess what happened here?
What happened?
A house here in Jacksonville, Florida this week.
Yeah.
That they want to sell their home. It's a black family.
Yeah.
Want to sell their home. They call somebody for an appraiser. the house, they were upset when the house appraised for almost $100,000 less than they were expecting.
Okay.
They then remove every single picture of their family out of their house, call another appraiser in the same week.
Uh-huh.
The house literally appraised for $100,000 more.
That's fucked up, and they should file a lawsuit against the original real estate company.
I mean, isn't it crazy to think that something just as simple as that, right? How does a normal everyday American gain extra wealth? It's from equity you build in a home.
Right.
So then you've done your job. You bought a home, you made your payments, you go to sell it and collect your profit. What if that family didn't do that and they just took that $100,000 hit and then I make $100,000? I mean, it's just...
It's fucked up.
To know that it's just in the system like that, that alone could have cost that family $100,000.
Right.
Which, and that's how we gain wealth, is through equity of property.
Or of equity of anything, right? Not just property. Yeah,
it's just, I never even thought about that. I never even considered that race could be a factor in the appraisal of a home.
Neither did I until you mentioned that. And that's fucked up. See,
it's scary.
It's very scary. And so when we talk about Black Lives Matter, those are the things we need to talk about. Right? Because that is discrimination. So that family should be taking their civil rights and taking that company and suing them for discrimination. I hope they do. Right?
Yeah.
So we need to do more of that when it's justified like that. Do you know what? Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem is, and again, this is what I hope, is that the protests in the streets keep happening. In my opinion, they need to keep happening. People still need to be walking around with signs. They need to be, you know, protesting peacefully. If you don't agree with what is happening, then you protest peacefully. And you don't stop until you start to see change. Because if not, our lives are so busy, we're going to forget. And then the next incident's going to happen and we're going to be like, oh, fuck. It's been a year already and we let the momentum die and you got to keep going. Like you, if this is your fight, you have to fight. You wouldn't give up if somebody was trying to take your kids away from you. You don't give up now. Essentially, your sons and daughters' lives are in danger. Keep fucking fighting peacefully until something happens. So I liked watching the baseball players walk off.
Right.
The NHL, I'm not surprised. And they took them about a day and they did it. And guess what? A little too late, guys. If you guys were going to make a movement, you should have done it with everybody else the day before.
Right.
And a couple of the Black players did say, you know, that NHL is a pretty white community. Now, I will say, though, in defense of that, on Brilliant Idiots, the truth of the matter is, in my opinion, it's my opinion, and it was the gentleman's opinion on the show, is that there's not a lot of Black hockey players because hockey equipment is very, very expensive, and the sport alone is very, very expensive. A stick is $200. The helmet is $200. The glove is $200. The stick breaks, and guess what? That's another $200. And you're supposed to have a couple of them, so you have at least $1,500 just in your outfit, your uniform, not alone.
And that doesn't mean you're any good.
Right. Not alone the $450 fee it costs to play, because you're renting ice, right? You're not playing football in a field. You're not playing basketball on a court that's out there, or soccer on a, you know, just a, all you need for that is grass. Hockey is in ice hockey and certain other sports. It requires wealth. And the truth is, Black communities are normally poor. And that's why you don't see them in that sport, right? That makes sense to me. Same thing where they talk about, this is what Alex said, and Alex is a Black Puerto Rican man. He said, it's not that Black people can't swim. It was that growing up, you didn't know people with pools.
Right. Or you didn't have a...
Where now it's more of a common thing, but when you're poor, and you are from a poorer community, people don't have pools.
Or community pools.
So no, you don't know how to swim.
Well, because I...
Yeah, and the community pools aren't safe, right? Because there's gangs and drugs and all this other stuff. So I'm lucky. I grew up with a rec center that you had to have a card for, and there was all this great stuff that also had swim lessons. People in Norfolk didn't have that same luxury. So, of course, I know how to swim.
Right. And I mean, I grew up in a black neighborhood, and we had a community pool, but I didn't get to go to it very often. And if I did get to go, it was certain hours, and mom or my sister, my older sister, was with me. There was no going there by myself.
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I do think, you know, there's certain reasons when you actually sit back and think of, like, well, why aren't there very many black people in hockey? Why don't you see a lot of black people in whatever other sports, like horseback riding, right?
Oh, because my God, it's so expensive.
It's expensive.
Very fucking expensive.
And that's why you don't know many. Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. You don't, that's why you don't even know very many people that ride horses, because just the sport alone is so expensive that middle class Americans can't afford it.
Not even,
right? You have to be upper middle class. So there are these sports that divide us based on class,
right?
Which then also, you know, connects to your race at some point. So it's interesting when you sit back and watch and say, well, why is this? Well, that makes
sense.
Right.
It's wealth gap. It's a wealth segregation. Yeah. It's a class segregation for, you know, because you can't afford it. You know, when I took horseback riding, English riding lessons as a kid, my mom had to save up in order for me to go.
Right.
It was expensive. The boots were expensive. The gear I had to wear, the helmet, the crop. Then you had to pay for the instructor and go to your lessons, right?
Yeah, even the riding pants alone, because of the leather inserts in the inside, and that it's a specific riding pants that you can only get from a tackle shop, even the pair of pants you have to put on to ride a horse
is expensive.
Too expensive.
And then you outgrow it because you're a fucking kid.
Right.
You outgrow your helmet. Those helmets are expensive because you have to have a certain type of helmet on. Because, trust me, if you fall off that fucking horse and you get kicked in the head, you want that fucking helmet.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So.
For sure. So it's interesting when you sit back and think about stuff like that. That makes sense about soccer, right? Like, if you look at foreign countries, especially foreign countries that don't have a lot of money, Brazil, like South America and stuff, what you can do is one ball. And just open area. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And you produce these amazing freaking soccer players because they can't afford baseball bats and all of this. Or baseball, I would say, is another sport that's easy. You just need a stick and a ball, right? Truly, if you wanted to play it. Basketball, another easy one to play. Yeah. But anything that you have to invest a lot of money in, it's difficult when you don't have the money, or, you know, when you're a lower class citizen.
Which is why I constantly say that we need to invest back into those communities, into the educational systems, because you need to have the education. You need to have the know-how to get out, to move up, and then to teach your children how to maintain that and stay out. And then when you're successful, you come back and you help other kids get the education that they need to get out. Because it all stems from education and opportunity. And you can't get your opportunity unless you have the education.
Mm-hmm. It's similar even in trailer parks, right? It doesn't mean that... Because we have some very, very poor white Americans, too, in the South and the Midwest, and a ton. Like you said, if you're learning from your parents and your parents are teaching you any way of life, and there's no outside community influencing you to further your education of what success truly looks like, or what's affordable to you, or what... you're actually capable of, right? Mm-hmm. If you've only seen your mother and your grandmother and you're this or you're that, be a cook, then that's all you think you could be.
Right.
You never assume that you can be a homeowner and, or, you know, a businesswoman or anything like that. That's not for people like me.
Right. So I want to tell you what Dion and I were talking about the other day, because I did grow up in a poor neighborhood. Okay. It was mixed race. Okay. But look, I had a school system that was fighting against me. I had a school system that told my mother in fifth grade that I wasn't smart enough to play a musical instrument because I wanted to be in band. School told me I wasn't smart enough. Sabrina, what's in my dining room table?
A piano.
A piano. I fucking play piano. Do you know that they told me I couldn't play an instrument because my math scores were low? Do you know that playing an instrument helps your math?
Oh, really?
But I had a school, yes. I had a school tell me I was too dumb to play an instrument.
Oh, yeah.
Went to middle school. Actually, middle school kind of stayed pretty standard. High school, I wanted to take AP classes.
Mm-hmm.
I was begging guidance counselors, teachers. I was begging for more education. They all told me no. I had teachers telling me no. Then what happened was my senior year, they were like, oh, okay, I think you can take an AP class now, when all I had was a half a day scheduled for the whole fucking year because I finished everything. I was like, fuck you.
Right.
Fuck you. I've been begging you for 3 fucking years. 3 years to take advanced math classes, to take advanced English classes. They wouldn't let me do it. And then, oh, and by the way, I took all my college credits in Spanish, but they wouldn't let me take an advanced English class. And then the other thing that was I fought for was they were building a new high school and I wanted to go, and the county wouldn't let me go because I wasn't in the district. Because they had the better software program classes. And I couldn't get in. So I had a system that was telling me I was fucking stupid.
Right.
But I fought them. Like, I kept... When you're in those situations, you have got to have the drive and the desire to fucking get your education. And mind you guys, this isn't a time when we didn't have Google. Right? I couldn't learn trigonometry online. I had to be in a classroom. And I couldn't get in the fucking classroom.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I'm always, it's about education. Be smarter, right? Have that drive. You got a phone in your hand. Most of everybody's got a phone in their hand. Computers, the libraries have free computers. Go learn.
I think, you know, the problem occurs when you have, and I'm sure it happens all the time, you have, you know, a little black girl like Tabby that does that, right? But then she gets her education like you did. She gets a college degree like you did. And then she sends in her resume and Samantha Smith gets picked instead of Shonda Smith, you know?
Right.
And that fucking sucks.
And that does. You're fucking right. Yeah. That's absolutely right. So.
Because then you see Shonda come home and tell her kids, like, what the fuck, like. So then, you know, the kids can get that mentality of, like, well, it didn't work for my mom. Why should I work that fucking hard? She's still going to end up working 2 jobs at McDonald's because they won't hire her at, you know, GM or wherever it might be, or GE or Apple Corp. So, it, you know, it's that frustration.
And I agree, there's a lot of that, and you have to work, you got to work past it. And you're right, like, I don't have that experience, right? But, like, my husband does, because his name is Dion.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He puts a resume in, and he put a resume in. He was supposed to meet a guy for an interview, but it was a casual interview at a restaurant, right? Because, you know, his business is different. The man spent 40 minutes talking to a black guy, not realizing Dion hadn't showed up. So he was about to give the other guy the job.
That's hilarious.
So it's crazy.
That's hilarious. But that's unconscious bias for you. That's the way it works.
Right.
So that's the way it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nuts. So, well, we'll see where this is going. So we, God, I can't believe it's going to be September already.
I know. It's insane.
It is, yeah. So we'll see what September brings us. August brought us doubleheader hurricanes. We have fires out in California
Okay, so listen here. Only in 2020 does a fucking hurricane literally circle around Florida and not hit it.
Yeah, I know. I know. And then to have two of them at the Gulf at the same time. Again, right. Like I said, the California's on fire again.
California's always on fire.
I know, always on fire. And so let's see what September brings us.
Yeah.
Who fucking knows? The truth is, this year is almost over, guys. So if anything, rather than counting that we've been in 6 months of this, what we've all promised, I think, and we're all hoping is 2021 is better, right? So I say we just start counting down.
Right.
We only got 3 more months left.
I'm just saying, I'm not buying a planner until I see a trailer for 2021, okay?
Yeah, right. All right. All right, say our goodbyes.
All right, guys, as always, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, give us a shout out at notasafespacepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Have a great day, guys. Bye.
Bye.